This is the Angel Connect podcast show series, episode number 21. The topic of due diligence is always a requirement for any kind of investor. And in this case, the question comes up, how much due diligence is enough? How much time and effort and resource do I put into effective due diligence? Well, Hall Martin discusses that in an interview with William Morgan. In this episode, Hall Martin interviews William Morgan about due diligence for angel investors. Some of the questions that are going to be answered is, how much is enough due diligence? And what are some strategies for successful and for effective due diligence? You'll hear that as Hall Martin introduces this episode with Mr. William Morgan. So here's Hall.
Welcome to the Angel Connect program. I'm here today with William Morgan of the Baylor Angel Network. William's background is part of a family office that has been a member of the Baylor Angel Network for 3 years. And they've actually made 20 investments, of which only two have gone away, which is quite a great track record for angel investing. So with that, let's listen in to the discussion we have here today with William.
You know, due diligence that you're talking about is a hot topic, as well as how do we do that. You have a pretty good track record and thought maybe you could walk through and tell us a little bit about how you find deals, how you screen them, and then how you diligence them. What are the key criteria you're looking for, how many hours you put into it, that sort of thing is, I think, what most people are trying to figure out is, because the challenge in due diligence is where do you stop? At what point do you say, okay, I'm writing a check or I'm not writing a check? If there's glaring errors, well, then you drop out pretty quick. But if it's okay, well, where's the line?
Yeah, and it's all about getting comfortable with the entrepreneur and building a level of trust between the investor and the entrepreneur that both feel comfortable with. And honestly, I've got a little bit of an unfair advantage in that most of our deals that we've done come through the Baylor Angel Network, and they do a lot of the legwork up front in sifting through hundreds of deals and applications, and the students do several hours of due diligence per company before they're even brought to the screening committee. So that's a huge advantage, is being part of a network like that that provides back-end support and coordination from a logistical side of formulating that kind of deal flow. And then from there, the presentations that we see give us a lot of insight into the entrepreneurs' personalities and how their attention to detail with the presentations. For instance, if the numbers don't fit in the presentation, that's probably a pretty big red flag. You're going up against a room full of investors that are very number savvy, and it's probably best that your numbers fit in your presentation. What we look at immediately is the qualitative side before we go into any of the financials or quantitative side. Start with the team and the advisors that are involved with the entrepreneurs. That's a real big key point for us because they might have a bad idea, but a great team and that's willing to take advice from their advisory team will often be able to pivot out of a bad idea and make it into a good idea.
So you look at the team first, and then what's the criteria that you use to take the deal out of the angel network room? There's a number that are going through that process, and how you decide which ones you're going to go pursue and do due diligence on and which ones you're not going to pursue?
Well, generally, we like companies that make items or have actual assets such as IP or trade secrets. And then once we feel comfortable with who owns the licensing and how it's written up, for instance, if it's a exclusive license from a university, that's generally a good start. One company that we did like but we backed out of, it was because the entrepreneur had the IP in his name, and then it was not an exclusive license to the company, and we just didn't feel comfortable with that setup. I think it's because the entrepreneur had done that because he'd been burned by a previous deal where his IP was taken away from him because of an exclusive license, and he didn't get as much money as he thought he should have for his IP. But that aside, we generally like things we can see and touch. You know, we've invested in several food companies, such as Primisi Chips and Ruby Red Tea, just because the quality that people are looking for in their food products now is much higher, and the larger companies can't seem to innovate and get it right on the first try, so they're looking to roll up these companies that have proven track records and success.
So do they have to have revenue to get in your due diligence program, or do they not have to have revenue? They can come in with a really good idea and a good team and, you know, the products there, but no revenue. Do you consider those?
Yes. As long as there's a proof of concept. For example, we have invested in a chemical company that has a really good proof of concept. They don't have any revenue yet or a manufacturing plant, but they were able to do tests in the lab and do a pilot plant where they proved that their process worked and they were able to create a superior product to what's out there on the market. That's a rare case.
So you, once they get into your due diligence process, what exactly do you do? How many hours do you spend on each deal, and what do you look for?
Generally spend 15 to 20 hours on our due diligence end, and that's only because anecdotally you'll hear that you spend 40 hours on due diligence minimum if you're going to have superior returns. At least that's what I've heard anecdotally. But a lot of the legwork is done for us by the Baylor Angel Network, so that, I believe, cuts out 20 or more hours of due diligence. And really, we're not leading a deal, and so a lot of the due diligence has been done previously by other investors, and so they're able to then provide us with the documents and the information that they've procured through their due diligence, and that speeds up our process quite a bit.
Okay, so by being a part of the Angel Network, you're able to cut your diligence time by about half because the Angel Network's done all the groundwork. And then once they go through your process, what exactly are you doing in your diligence? What are the two or three key things you're looking for in there that really makes the difference of either investing or not investing?
What I'm looking for then, once we get past the qualitative, is it a good idea? Do we see the proof of concept? Do we like the team, and do we like the support from their advisory team? Then we get into sort of more quantitative, which is not necessarily financial, because at this stage most of the financials are made up, in my opinion. So we look more at the deal structure and make sure that the interests of the entrepreneur and the investors are aligned in the term sheet, make sure that the proper incentives are still in place for the entrepreneur. They're not giving away too much of their equity up front, making sure that the valuation we feel is appropriate for the long-term growth of the company. If you come in too low on evaluation, it can take away too much equity up front. If they're going to need to raise a bunch of equity or a bunch more money going forward, then we generally stay away from those that need multiple rounds of funding. But, you know, some of the tools that we've seen and have really liked are milestone approach to valuation, where the interests of the entrepreneur then are tied to meeting certain milestones, and by meeting those milestones, they'll get increased valuations, or it'll leave it at a lower valuation if those milestones aren't met. And that then gives the investor some assurances that the company's going to do what it's claimed it's going to do.
So in your due diligence, do you go all the way out talking to every team member, every customer, competitors, other investors? At what point do you go outside the documentation and start talking to people about a certain deal, and how much do you do in that direction?
So generally we will talk to the team itself, talk to one advisor at a minimum, and then if they have customers, we like to talk to one or two customers and get the feel for how they've used the product or service and get their feedback in person rather than taking the company's word for it. And then the competition landscape companies always like to claim that they're the only company out there doing something like this. That's generally not the case. So we do a lot of market analysis on our own and see what else is out there that may not be a direct competitor, but could be an indirect competitor. That's really where we make our decision, is how big is the pain that they're trying to solve, and is this a pain that's a trend, or is it a pain that's there to stay?
I see. Okay. And how much do you do on the actual financial analysis? What do you do there to analyze the either the projections going forward or the current income statement balance sheet that they're providing?
I generally cut their projections in half with the same expenses and double the timeline. And if the company is still going to make it barely, or if it's still attractive, then it's generally makes it past that rough filter. But I don't put a lot of stake in the financials that the companies provide. I look mostly at what their fixed expenses are, how many people they're paying, and how lean they've been in their hiring and outsourcing of contract work. So we really like to look at companies that are taking the lean startup approach, bootstrapping it. It means that they have their own equity and skin in the game. But companies that are that have a high burn rate and aren't going to make it without our funding generally are a little on the edge of whether we're going to invest or not. And, you know, it's not just one of these items that we talked about that make or break a deal. It's the cumulative aspect that we look at.
Right, right. What about any metrics, any user metrics or financial metrics, or are there any of those that you look at to try to determine the healthiness of the business?
Gross margin is a pretty good metric to look at. And for a startup, they really need to have 50% or more margin in what they're producing for us to look at them, because expenses always increase. And that margin is going to decline before it will increase.
All right. Well, you said that your group has made 20 investments and only two have turned out to be duds. And that's quite remarkable. Most investors, you make 10 investments and 5 to 6 are duds, you know, pretty soon. And then 3 or 4 are going to, you know, return a little bit, and 1 or 2 return a lot is the theory there. Of the two that didn't work out, What happened there, without getting too much of the details, of why did those not work out compared to the others, although that's still a tremendous track record there?
Well, and to be fair, we've only been doing the angel investing for 3.5 years, so that number could rise. But the companies that went under, one was a clear leadership in the team failure. And that was something that we had recognized in the beginning, but chose to ignore because the technology and the space was really attractive, and that we broke our number one rule of starting with the qualitative team and advisors. And we didn't like either the team or the advisors, but we liked the product and the technology. And so that one broke rule number one, and it ended up being a dud within a year.
Mm-hmm.
The second one was a student team from Baylor that we felt like helping out and being a part of their process, sort of starting from beginning to end and being a part of it and watching them grow. And that was more what we have chalked up to educational expense, seeing how a startup goes from ground zero, just an idea, and produces that idea. And that was a case where the team lost steam and capital and ended up not taking some of the advice from their advisors on the path to take, and ended up running out of money as well.
I see. Yeah, so it was more of an educational give back on that one than a actual financial investment, it sounds like.
Yeah, that was the takeaway for us, was that, you know, we got to see them do a Kickstarter, saw how that worked, saw them deliver a product, but saw that the market demand just wasn't there to sustain the product.
I see. Well, any other words of advice to someone doing due diligence? If other angels are coming in and listening in and want to know what they should be doing, I think you've given them a lot of direction there with the amount of time, the stages you go through. Any other words of wisdom there about how you do due diligence on these angel deals?
I reach out. One of the key things for me in this process that I'm still learning about and going through is reaching out to people that have done this for longer and getting advice on items that I'm not 100% sure on or don't understand how it's structured or why it's structured that way. I do a lot of reading the David Rose book, Angel Investing and How to Have Fun Doing It. That's been a really big help, as well as reaching out to the different mentors that the Baylor Angel Network has in place.
Correct. So what did you like about the David Rose book? I've read it too. It's a really great read and has a lot of good advice. What did you find particularly useful from that?
It lays out a very easy, broad structure for how to look at due diligence, as well as how to interact appropriately with the entrepreneurs, both before the deal, during the deal, and after you've invested. And that's really provided a nice groundwork for how we've set up our own process. We've taken some things from his outline and added some of our own just based on each situation, but it just had a nice framework to work with.
Yeah, it's a good structure to use as well. Well, good. Well, I appreciate you taking time to talk with us today on the Angel Connect program and share your experience. And like I said, you have a great track record there in choosing winners out of these deal flow rooms. There's quite a few deals going through them, and so it can be a challenge, picking in the right ones. And then having a rigorous process really makes a big difference as well, which you guys seem like you have a pretty good one in place for.
And one more thought is that if you're ever not sure about a company, the likelihood that they'll be back to ask for more money is always quite high.
Well, that's right. You don't have to jump in right now. You can almost always get in later. May not be as a good evaluation, but you can probably get back in if you really want to.
Exactly.
So that's a good point as well. Well, cool. Well, thanks for taking time to talk. We'll see you at the next Baylor meeting here in about a week or so, and we'll catch up more then.
All right. Thanks so much for the call, Hall.
You bet. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye.